Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, sometimes humor, and of course, progressive persuasion. Although Brian's concept was less is more, more or less, in reality, you could never have enough of Brian's magic in your life. Today, Truman O'Brien is guiding us from the Voice of Vachon Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. And joining Truman is his wingman, Craig Bellis. Zooming in from home is Kevin Jones, and I'm Bruce Holman, your host today, zooming in from my Vachon home. Joining us today is Stacy Oakes with 350 Tacoma. And she's here to join us in the small talk section, talking about the Puget Sound Energy's proposed liquid natural gas plant on the Tacoma Tide Flats. But before we get to that, let's just check in with everybody on our Vachon and broader world. So, Kevin, what's happening with you this week?
Well, Bruce, we're looking ahead this week to a fun event on Saturday, October 29th. So our listeners will want to jot down from 9:45 until noon, Saturday, October 29th. It's the Indivisible Vachon Get Out the Vote costume party. And we are going to be dressing up for our favorite issue and going out on the ferry triangle route to inspire people to realize that, hey, there's an election coming up on November 8th, and it's time to make sure you get your ballot, figure out how to fill it out, and get it submitted before the deadline. So the ferry triangle route costume party on the 29th of October is in the works right now.
So do you dress up as your favorite politician or your favorite issue or your favorite what?
It's open to Vachon's creativity. So there's going to be a prize for the best costume. There's going to be, you know, some information handed out about get out the vote and so on. But it's really, really easy. So you basically show up at the north end upper parking lot on Vachon for pastries at 9:45. And then we're going to walk down, catch the 10:20 boat to Southworth, and then we're going to get on the 10:45 to Fauntleroy, and then the 11:35 back to Vachon. So the key thing is 9:45 North End upper parking lot, and then we'll proceed to the boats. So hope folks can join us.
And once again, what's the date?
It is October 29th, which is a Saturday, a couple weeks away.
Okay.
Sounds like a party. So, Craig, what's happening with you?
Well, I was just going to say, Kevin, you're optimistic about those ferry times. Let's keep our fingers crossed on those.
We plan to arrive early and stay late as
I was going to say. Yeah. Hopefully you won't be stuck in Southworth for, you know, 2 hours or something. My week, just a bunch of little things. I got my COVID and flu shot here the other day, one in each arm. Everything was fine. No problems. Except for this twitch I've developed. filed my property tax appraisal appeal.
Oh, appeal.
Yeah, appeal.
Oh, good for you.
It was due on Monday, and of course, the website went down. So I printed off a hard copy, and Lynette ran it down to the post office to be postmarked yesterday. But there was a little problem with postmarking yesterday.
Oh, it was closed.
Yeah. It's a holiday.
Yeah.
Indigenous Peoples
Important
Day.
Holiday.
Yeah, oh, yeah. No. So I had forgotten that that was a national holiday and the post office was closed. I was able to get back on the website after multiple tries and got the documentation in on time.
Have you had luck with that in the past?
I've never done it in the past.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was worth a try.
It's appropriate this year.
It's a huge jump.
Yeah.
And You know, it's interesting, just as a legal matter or a procedural matter, you can't kind of turn your neighbors in. they will not look at comparable appraisals.
Really?
No. County appraisals. Yeah. They'll look at private appraisals, but they're a different division. They don't know why the people that made the appraisals made them, for what reason. So you can't say, well, my next door neighbor's got 10 times more acreage and a view, and his property values are lower.
Hmm.
And I thought, no, you can't do that? No, you can't. So you can, but they won't read it. So other than that, took my wife, my lovely wife, up for a little flight around Vashon, warm up the airplane a little bit, warm up my landing skills, and it all worked out well.
Sounds like an exciting week, and doing battle with the bureaucracy is always invigorating, right?
Yeah. Ours are frustrating, one or the other.
Stacy, how about you? What's going on with you this week?
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Yeah, I've been trying to finish harvesting the rest of the blackberries around my property to make some jam and get those before the weather turns. And was down in Seattle at the Indigenous Peoples Day celebration with my granddaughter yesterday. And glad to be here. Yeah.
All those great fall things that go on the island and in the Northwest, for sure. Yeah. Truman, how about you?
Well, speaking of harvest, I because I've had this darn back surgery and I'm still not totally ambulatory yet, I'm kind of partially so, I can't pick our grapes this year and make my world-famous grape jelly from my Island Bell variety of grapes. They're quite tart, and they make great grape jelly.
They do make great grape jelly.
Gee, thank you. I knew that was coming. But so I can't do it this year. And so I got a hold of the food bank, and they are going to come out, or someone from the food bank is going to come out and glean my my grapes. Ooh. And I haven't told them this yet, but I think I'm going to donate several bags of sugar and some sure gel so that we can actually have them make their own jelly. So that would be kind of cool to do.
A worthy cause.
Yeah, wow. We'll see if that works out. But one other quick thing, and that is about flying. There's a young couple just bought an airplane and needed to get checked out here at our little Vashon Airport, which is a little bit demanding, shall I say, to get in and out of. And I had the opportunity to fly with the young woman who was a pilot, and she did a great job and kind of got some of my flight instructor skills tuned up again, which was a lot of fun. But anyway, that's it for me.
Sounds good. Yeah. Well, for me, it's been an amazing sort of end of summer, beginning of fall couple weeks here that we've got going on. It's just, I can't remember a fall that's been this dry and this sunny since I've lived in the Northwest for the last 40 plus years. So it's just been amazing to catch up on all those things, like Stacy, getting the last of the blackberries, cutting back the last of the weeds and getting ready for winter, basically. And of course, I'm sure you guys are doing this with your airplane as well, just sort of getting everything tied down and ready for the winds and the rains that are sure to come in the next few weeks. So today, like all days, is a significant day. Yesterday was Indigenous Peoples Day, and tomorrow, October 12th, is Columbus Day, formerly a day celebrated, and the reason Craig couldn't go to the post office is a national holiday, but it's also been transformed into Indigenous Peoples Day internationally, but also in the United States. Stacy, can you tell us a little bit about the Indigenous Day celebration in Seattle that you went to?
Yeah, and I think Seattle was one of the first cities that started to do Indigenous Peoples Day. I know Matt Remley was one of the people that really worked really hard on that. And so the part I went to yesterday, there was a march and a rally from Westlake over to City Hall, and then more speakers and songs inside the City Hall there. And I didn't make it to it. My granddaughter's only five, so she only has so much stamina, but there's also a dinner at Daybreak Star too. So, yeah, it was a good event.
Oh, great. Well, good. Any other comments about Indigenous Peoples Day, Columbus Day?
Any other comments?
Well,
no, I got one.
I'm not sure what I'm allowed to say or not say on here, but anything
you want. Go.
There are only seven words you can't say. So other than that,
it's amazing to me that there's still kind of that ability to for people to it's Columbus Day, as if he's just kind of a normal guy. But I mean, if you really read all the stuff he really did, like, that was still not normal for his time period either, you know. And it's pretty darn ugly. And definitely shouldn't be mentioning his name anymore, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, we could go on, we could have a whole show on this very topic. All the discussion lately about replacement the doctrine that the far right is pushing seems just so ironic and unjust in light of the fact that we just displaced an entire culture in North America. I don't know. It makes my head spin.
I was just going to mention, if you watch the series The Sopranos on television, there was one episode where they, you know, the Italians were all up in arms over Columbus Day being changed. And I hate to make light of it, but it was really quite humorous the way they handled that whole thing. But they were very upset that poor Columbus was being so, admonished or whatever. But anyway,
maligned.
Maligned, that's the word, yeah.
You know, that happened in Tacoma as well, when Tacoma was in the process, the city of instituting Indigenous Peoples Day as well. There was pushback to a certain degree from the Italian community. Yeah. And one of the things that I really mentioned to the mayor was that, you know, you could still celebrate Italian American heritage, but that's not the guy to pick. There are so many men and women of Italian heritage who have done actual great things you know, when you're celebrating, when you institute, we're going to celebrate Italian American Heritage Day or Heritage Month now, you know, that's again still not a name to be included in that. And hopefully that can be that can be a good feeling.
Kevin.
I totally agree. I am quarter Italian, but just by way of passing, there might be some other Italian blood here on the show. I do think I agree. If it was Truman who said there is a whole huge topic that we could discuss regarding Indigenous Peoples Day, and Stacy, if you're interested, we might find an opportunity to do that if you'd be an interested spokesperson for some of those topics. And I guess the last thing, in the chat, we're talking about Dakota hopefully reaching out to us, and it looks like if he tries again to log in, it looks like Truman is keeping an eye on the Zoom. So maybe Dakota can join us today as well.
That'd be great. Yeah. And it's in the measure of what we're talking about is the measure of the kind of changes, cultural and social changes we've seen in the United States. And, you know, since some of us grew up in the 40s and 50s, when Columbus Day was a national holiday and the parades in major cities and all that sort of stuff. And it's a sort of a measure of how far we've come, also a measure of how far we need to go. But the sense that debate and that change has even taken place is encouraging to me. You know, that it's just not this sort of lockstep, you know, sort of, you know, honoring somebody who was a troubled figure at best in American history and in Western civilization, and represents the very worst of that sort of doctrine of discovery, and yet was celebrated, you know, sort of unquestionably celebrated for generations, and now I think that readjustment is taking place. And that's part of what, Craig, I think leads to that sort of replacement theory pushback from the right. You know, it's a deep part of the culture wars that we're seeing right now throughout the United States. And so I think it is a topic worth discussing. Today is also, and Truman and Craig, you may want to comment on this. Today, October 11th, 1910, was the day Theodore Roosevelt became the first president in the United States to fly in an airplane.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when that happened.
I remember that well. Right?
And just like yesterday.
That's right, yeah.
Well, Teddy was a wild man, so I can see he'd be the first president to climb into an airplane. In 1910, that wasn't much of an airplane, I can tell you that.
No. It was the Wright brothers.
Wright brothers' first flight was when, Truman?
1904?
Yeah.
Yeah,
1904, I think, yeah. 6 years after the first person flew on purpose.
Right. Yeah. Well, today is also the International Day of the Girl, so a day to focus on the new unique challenges faced by girls culturally all over the world. And it's also National Coming Out Day, a day to support the LGBTQ plus community and for those who are identifying in that LGBTQ plus community. So let's shift and talk to Stacy a bit about the Tacoma Puget Sound Energy Liquid Natural Gas Plant. And Stacy, you work with 350 Tacoma. So could you tell us a little bit about yourself, about your work, and also about 350 Tacoma?
Yeah, sure. So 350 Tacoma really got started in 2017, a big part in response to Puget Sound Energy's liquefied natural gas plant, or we might be referring to that as LNG for short. And it's actually coming off right off the heels from defeating the methanol plant that was actually the fight right before that one. It would have been the world's largest methanol refinery and defeated that. And then you might have heard about Kalama, Washington, also recently defeated from the same company, another attempt to do that world's largest methanol refinery. So Tacoma is constantly being attacked by these fossil fuel projects. And the response to the LNG facility was really what put 350 Tacoma together. And we try to really connect with climate work in a very justice-focused way. So making sure that we're recognizing the role that racism plays in the climate crisis and its continuation, and the importance of showing up for non-climate work too in the area to really build those ties between movements, because we're all really kind of fighting a lot of the same thing. I actually got my start in organizing around that same time as well in 2017, because of the LNG fight as well. I was on Facebook and heard a call out from a Puyallup tribal member that Puget Sound Energy was putting in these pipelines without permits, and they, you know, wanted more attention on it, and you know, asked people to come down and help. So showed up and felt really important. And so I just kept showing up and led me to realize I had good organizer skills and was helpful to the movement. And now kind of do that full time. So it's been a really life-changing experience kind of showing up and doing that.
Can you tell us a little bit about the 350 movement? I mean, 350 began, you know, around a group and around Bill McKibben, but, you know, it's a national organization, but it has individual organizations all over the country. And so 350 Tacoma is not really affiliated, but grew out of that same sense. And can you talk about what 350 means?
So 350 refers to 350 parts per million, relating to air pollution. And basically there's kind of a, there's a line where if you go above this parts per million, it starts really impacting human health. And 350 is that line. And right now I think we're up somewhere closer to 430. Mm-hmm. So we're already there and need to bring it back. So it's kind of this like target of bringing air pollution back is what the name is founded around. And so any local chapters can kind of spring up as long as you are in agreement with some pretty basic principles. And then each group really gets to kind of define how they do stuff. They really vary. Like, you know, you'll see 350 Seattle is going to have numerous paid staff and a bigger budget. And then a lot of other groups around the country are going to be completely volunteer run, low to no budget, and just kind of springing up to really push back against whatever, you know, the local stuff is that's happening to them, kind of like with 350 Tacoma.
So tell us a little bit more about the liquid natural gas plant and the process that's gone on so far. And as I understand it, you know, they've really not followed the permit processes. You know, they're building on native land, you know, Puyallup land without permission. I mean, there's a whole bunch of issues. Can you sort of tease those out a bit for us?
Yeah, and so basically the facility itself is part refinery, part storage tank, part kind of distribution. So there's a lot of different stuff going on inside that area. And the storage tank is 8 million gallons, and that's liquefied natural gas is basically the same kind of gas you might find in your home, but the liquefaction basically condenses it to, I think, around like 600 times smaller. So that's why they do that for transport and storage, because you can kind of squeeze a bunch more into the same amount of space. It has to be chilled to negative 260 degrees to do that. So there's safety issues you could see happening if the stuff keeping it refrigerated to that degree were to fail, then all of a sudden that gas is going to expand. It then becomes potentially explosive once it's not frozen anymore too. If that were to spill straight into the water, you're looking at a cryogenic freeze on all of the sea life that would touch, or the people that would come into contact with that. So there's some, you know, just general safety issues that are present when you're talking about kind of that really condensed gas. And there's also health impacts whenever you're talking about a refinery, right? So that's potentially 24-hour-a-day emissions of carcinogens, particulate matter, some pretty nasty stuff. And for this specific location, you're looking at a ton of other fossil fuel and heavy industry already in that area. So this is more emissions for people who are already seeing a lower life expectancy, who are already have increased cancer rates. And surprise, it's right next to the line of the reservation, right? So this is that pattern of putting these facilities right next to or on indigenous land.
Right. Kelly?
Yeah, thanks, Stacy, for that excellent summary. You know, I'm dismayed by how some spokespeople from Puget Sound Energy characterize what you just described. One spokesperson, whose name I don't recall, said, if the tank ruptures, the liquid natural gas just evaporates and goes away. And, you know, there's well-documented examples of that happening and catching fire in a huge fireball is what results. Also, the notion that natural gas's significant content is methane, which is a hugely impactful carbon pollution responsible for much rapid global warming, much more rapid global warming than CO2. So I preface this question, Stacy, that I've heard things like that. Are you hearing more things along those lines, or is Puget Sound Energy taking a more realistic line about the health and safety risks of the plant?
Puget Sound Energy is definitely not taking any more responsibility or changing their stances on what they think about LNG. Within the last couple of years, even the CEO you know, would even say they still thought that the fracked gas is a bridge fuel that we need to get to the renewable energy future. So, you know, not seeing reality on that point. This particular plant is really mainly used for maritime fuel for vessels. They say it's also a little bit for residential customers, possibly if the demand got high enough, a few coldest days of the year. But really, they kind of had to put that in if they wanted to charge us residential customers for the production costs, you know, for building the facility. So far, we haven't seen that actual demand. But one of the other things I actually do is I'm part of a group called Seattle Cruise Control. So we follow maritime concerns really closely. And the idea that LNG is a better fuel for maritime and is going to be somehow a climate solution is also being debunked in that realm quite widely. You'll see the ports pretending that they can't hear that. You'll see some of the big industries pretending they can't hear that. But the studies are out there. You know, the International Council on Clean Transportation has released studies. There was actually a study group by the International Maritime Organization themselves, who are kind of an industry captured group. And for them to come out with a paper that clearly says LNG is not a climate solution for shipping, it's going to lead to stranded assets, it has no place in a zero, you know, in a zero emissions future. And frankly, when you really look at all the data, if they're using the most common ship's engine, then that burning LNG can actually be 70 to 80 times worse than using marine grade oil for the climate when you look at life cycle emissions. So it's a pretty big lie that LNG would somehow clean up shipping. Puget Sound Energy is still clinging to that. They put it as part of their recent rate increase case, that that's one of the reasons that this facility is in the public's interest and should be able to charge the public for the facility. So there's definitely still not any more reality coming through from Puget Sound Energy, unfortunately.
You know, one comment about bunker fuel. The fuel that they use in ships right now, that's kind of the bottom of the barrel. I mean, it's the dregs that's left over from the refinery production. And this stuff is, you can hardly pump it. It's so thick. And I can understand where the petroleum industry, I would think, would still want to keep that because it's a use for that stuff, which is otherwise not usable. So anyway, just a thought.
Yeah, very much. And that's that heavy fuel oil. Right. So the marine grade oil is the cleaner of the available fuels. Mm-hmm. And so what it would take would just be those ships paying for that better fuel. It'd be like you paying for the premium at the pump versus, right. You know, the unleaded. Right. And instead, right. They're going and doing stuff like this, where they're building these whole new facilities for something that isn't even a solution.
Right. I looked at a little bit at the two rate increases that PSC is talking about here coming up in January, I guess, and then one that's spread out over several years. And refresh my memory, did they mention the building of this plant as some justification for the rate increase, or did they not mention it at all?
No, the Tacoma LNG facility is one of the infrastructure projects they're trying to justify these rate increases with, which I don't know if everyone's heard, but that rate increase could be up to 20% for electric and 17% for gas customers, which is huge when everybody's already struggling to pay bills. And the Tacoma LNG got a ton of comments submitted against it, partly with, again, this idea that you're going to pay for a facility that isn't even really for residential use as a residential customer is pretty crazy. And so it was actually a big portion of the comments that got turned in were about this facility. And I know that the Puyallup tribe have been really actively pushing back against that rate increase for that particular portion as well.
One more quick question, Bruce, sure. If you don't mind.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
a liquid natural gas facility, is it appropriate to build one anywhere?
I mean, if I got to choose, no, because we know that we can't keep continuing on with new fossil fuel infrastructure, especially methane, like Kevin mentioned, is actually a lot worse for the climate than a lot of the other fuels when you look at it in a 20-year lifespan. So on a climate level, no, we need to stop with fracked gas, you know, right away, and start shutting down what we're using even. And then when you look at that again from more of a social justice perspective, you know, I definitely don't want this near where I live. I assume you guys wouldn't want this on Vashon. And we know they'd never get away with putting something like this in Seattle, right? So why are they allowed to put it on the edge of a reservation on the ancestral tide flats of the Puyallup tribe, right? Especially when the tribe's been fighting it since the beginning. And in order to get past that, Puget Sound Energy started construction 2 years before having the necessary building permits, which is why the facility is now already in use while the tribe is still fighting the permit in court.
Hmm. Yeah, Stacy, wow. Could you talk a little bit more about that, the Puyallup tribe opposition, and where did it come from? When did it begin? How has it developed? I mean, it's been a long running battle between PSE and the Puyallup tribe, as I understand it.
Yeah, and I definitely can't speak for the tribe, just from what I've, you know, as somebody engaged in the fight and getting to mm-hmm. see a lot of the resistance that the tribe has been really putting out there. But, you know, they were involved back in 2017 when this was really getting more public as well. I know that there was pushing back against like the shoreline permit and really trying to engage every decision-making agency. So the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency reaching, you know, really trying to reach out to Governor Inslee around this as well. The Department of Ecology, you know, pretty much every agency. At one point there was stop work requests sent out because of that working without the permit. And this really goes back to how messed up our entire system is and how far we really still have to go with racism being involved in our processes, and just a lack of knowledge around what that these are sovereign nations. You know, if they're saying no, or if they're saying, you know what, could we get a health assessment? Could we get a safety analysis? Those things should happen. And it is extremely just disbelievable to me that the city of Tacoma, that Governor Inslee, that all of these groups could all just be like, well, it's not technically my job to be the one to stop them from doing these bad things. But you know, there is a trust responsibility. When you delegate the authority for being able to do these permits, then there's also that responsibility to make sure that they are being treated as the sovereign nations they are. And there's a very, very big lack of education by our government officials around that. And just kind of a abdication of responsibility all the way around, and giving the responsibility of being the lead SEPA agency to the city of Tacoma for something like this, when we knew that the city of Tacoma was actively trying to get the project. You know, how do you fight back against that?
The city of Tacoma does have a bit of a reputation, as we know, on the south side of Vashon, having lived with the prevailing ASARCO winds and the existence of the 560-foot tall chimney that sat over there for decades and decades. So perspective.
Mm-hmm. Here it is. And Stacy, could you tell us a little bit about the Native Daily Network and the documentary Ancestral Waters?
Yeah. Native Daily Network has actually been on the ground, you know, really covering this fight back since 2017 as well. And without them, I don't know, you know, if we'd have been able to really get it more as public as it was about what's going on, for their footage to be there, for people to see really what was taking place, was huge for this getting the attention that it did, and capturing what was happening. And with all of the footage from that front lines, they were able to put together a documentary called Ancestral Waters. And it was actually just at the Gig Harbor Film Festival last month. Mm-hmm. And it just very moving, very, very moving documentary. And it really focuses, although the fight has a lot of aspects to it, it really focuses on the impacts to the tribe of this, and, you know, how they've had to fight for their treaty, for their way of life, for their people, you know, ever since colonization started. And when you kind of get a taste of how this fight happened, and again, all of these agencies just kind of like, oh, not my responsibility, you know, and the lack of awareness around around the tribe's sovereignty, it's a fight that's happening everywhere, to tribes all over. And it, I think, as somebody who really didn't know that much before starting to come to this fight, This documentary is a great way to kind of get a little bit of idea about how that is. And so there's some really good educational piece that comes from that. And so their website is nativedailynetwork.org. And you can see the trailer for the documentary there. You could also contact them if that's some, if there you hope to event, you know, do a screening for your community of the documentary, or just to donate to their great work and make sure that they're covering other stories that are really important to Indian country.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the Native Daily Network, can you talk a little bit about who they are and what they do? And they do have a website that people can access what they do, right?
Yeah, the beautiful website, and very full of pictures and videos and articles. And so I would encourage folks to go there and just check it out. Don't want to, again, speak for people, but it's Benita and Darren Moore, and their granddaughter Mariah really kind of make up Native Daily Network. And it's definitely a nonprofit that's worth supporting. There's so few people really out there kind of uplifting Indigenous issues, and to have them here doing that is really important.
Great. Could you talk a little bit about how 350 Tacoma is working with young people, working with schools? How are you trying to engage sort of a younger population in this fight, and in sort of education, if you will, about climate change and about the liquid natural gas plant?
Yeah, 350 Tacoma has partnered with Sunrise Tacoma in the past. And if you're not familiar, Sunrise Movement is a youth-led movement. And so we supported the youth movement to try to get a climate emergency declaration. The city of Tacoma did, after pressure from youth, declare a climate emergency. I believe on the exact same day that the Puget Sound Clean Air Agency approved the final permit for the Tacoma LNG. But it feels so important to really support youth and to help provide some mentorship opportunities and organizing support. They're really going to be the most impacted by climate. You know, we're going to be here for a little while longer, but they're really going to see, you know, so much more of what's coming than we are. And, so it's very important. And I think when we're not helping make sure that there's more people that have been around organizing and growing up around organizing, it's much harder to know how to do it, right? And so I've always personally loved working with youth and children. And so that's one of the things I'm really excited about, working on a project with Dakota Case, who was also going to be on as Puyallup tribal member, and just really working to try to start doing some restoration projects locally, as well as like through that process, helping mentor and teach youth how to do some of that organizing and making sure that they're really kind of rewarded and get to do skill building for that work so that we can keep carrying on.
So Stacy, and nativedailynetwork.org, all one word .org. Are there, I think you mentioned there's volunteer opportunities. Is that the case? And what would folks on Vashon maybe expect that they might be able to do if there are volunteer opportunities?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's I'm not sure if through Native Daily Network there's the volunteer opportunities at the moment. With the project that we're starting to work on, the youth eco restoration project with Dakota, if there are youth that are really interested, you know, that's you could definitely kind of reach out and see if we could kind of incorporate to work together. And there should be some events coming up over the next set of months that folks could come to. We're just kind of working on getting started, so we don't have a lot ready to jump into right this moment yet with it. And then 350 Tacoma, we have a website, 350tacoma.org. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, so folks can follow kind of what's going on and participate. There's still a lot to do with city council. They're in the process of this big zoning change right now where we're trying to get them to go less heavy industrial, and the Port of Tacoma and other business interests are like, it's great, let's leave it how it is. And the city, of course, as we've talked about, is inclined to listen to business. So there is going to be continued public participation opportunities around that sub area plan too. So watching 350 Tacoma for those opportunities is a great idea.
Great. So Craig, Truman, any other questions for Stacy at this point? Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, I'll jump in. I know Stacy, there's been a lot of Vashon involvement in the hearings about the LNG facility, some of the safety issues that you mentioned, the climate issues, the ratepayer cost issues, all of those things. And then the process is now in litigation, right? I think this is now the appeals process that we're currently in the middle of. What do you envision next in this timeline? And is there an opportunity for activists to raise their voice at some point in the future, or is that kind of unclear about what might happen next?
Yeah, so it is in the litigation process at the moment, in the appeal process. From what I've heard, they're going to be back in court later this month, next month. So pretty soon will be that court opportunity. I'm not sure how long after those court proceedings they have to make their ruling. So we'll just have to kind of wait and watch there. Unfortunately, when a fight gets to this point, there's really not a decision maker to push on, right? So there's not really a place to be like, okay, this is who we got to convince to change that. When you're talking about a judge being the decision maker, legally, that's not an option at all. So, you know, I mean, we can continue to speak out about the facility and how it shouldn't be there. We can continue to support the Puyallup tribe. But not in kind of a, this is the lever and here's how we can pull it kind of a way, which can be hard to get involved in. But again, kind of going back to with Tacoma specifically, there's this project with the Tacoma LNG, but there's going to keep being these projects unless we can kind of change everything. So watching to make sure that new projects that might go in get stopped at an earlier stage, right? PSE building before they had the permits is really, I think, a big part of why the facility got built and why it got to this stage. It's hard for a court to say you can't use it once it's already built, right? And PSE knew that no one would probably stop them. So I think there's also a bigger picture of how can we change the rules in our state, right? How can we make it so places that know they want a project can't be the lead SEPA agency that determines if paperwork is good enough or if health impacts assessments are needed. You know, we need to stop. And that goes again to show how our fights are connected. Police can't police themselves. They shouldn't be looking into themselves. And these cities shouldn't be looking into their own permits. You know, it's a pretty basic thing. And how can we make sure that our elected officials are getting the education they need around tribal sovereignty? So there's not this whole like, it's probably not my job to care about it that goes on. So I think there's some bigger picture issues that no matter where you are, we can be trying to work on how can we change the way that our state does these things so that these permits are not going through in these same
ways. Yeah, I just want to say thanks for clarifying that. I know that I hear that question as I talk to people about climate issues here on Vashon. So really appreciate your ability to put this all into perspective for us.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having us on to talk about it. And...
Oh, yeah. So we're about 4 weeks from today will be election day. So what are the elections going on in Tacoma that have an impact on this? Or that are there any particular races that you're looking at that you think need to people need to be aware of and pay attention to?
Well, although I organize with 350 Tacoma, I'm actually up in Snohomish County on the Tulalip Reservation. So I only follow some of that so closely. So I don't have particular ones to speak to specifically in Tacoma right now. And I think that unfortunately, one of the things where we really miss out too is not focusing and really getting people into it more during the primaries, you know, because by the time we get to this point, it's like, well, there's this Democrat, but they're really not progressive, but hey, their opponent's a Republican. That's way worse, you know? And so it's in a, like, a, okay, so we'll get somebody mediocre again. That's somebody who would probably let these kind of permits just slide right through and say, it's not my job. So it feels like to me, the important part is how are we going to get ahead of, you know, that type of moment in the future to make sure we have candidates that we're actually excited about when we get to this point. But to change up Tacoma City Council, which is what needs to happen, unfortunately, it's going to have to be some sort of slate of candidates that get run, because when we get one good person on there, you know, it's just kind of a really uncomfortable job for them. And they really pride themselves on voting 9-0 all together. Every time.
So Stacy, does the Pierce County Council have influence on these issues, or is it really City of Tacoma Council, do you think?
On a lot of the dirtiest industry, it's going to be down there at what's known today as the Port of Tacoma, which was, you know, the ancestral tide flats of the tribe. And so a lot of that really is the city, the port. The Port of Tacoma also makes some decisions. So your port elections are actually pretty important, even though people don't really know that much about them. And then in this big rezoning that I was talking about, Pierce County does have a vote. But I think the ultimate vote goes back to that Tacoma City Council, those folks that pride themselves on doing some of the fastest and easiest permitting for business. They actually advertise that.
All right. The reason I mentioned it is Indivisible Tacoma is focusing on a few candidates in the upcoming election. Robin Denson, Pierce County Council District 7 is the one, but it sounds like that is not a direct, as nearly a direct of the relationship between this issue and the Tacoma City Council. But on Indivisible Vashon, Get Out the Vote Washington page, you can find opportunities to support Robin Denson. So that is at least a step in the right direction.
So, Kevin, Truman, Craig, elections on Vashon, what are the big issues? Or are there any big issues? Or are they all just sort of that, as Stacy described them, sort of that either or kind of issues for Vashon?
Go for it, Kevin.
I'm not tracking local, so there might be some local election that's really important, and Truman may be tied into some of that. The big issue for Vashon right now is, and the 34th Legislative District, is that Representative Cody is retiring and stepping down. She ran the House Health Care Committee. So that's a super important job that she had. That doesn't mean that her replacement will have that job, but there are two Democrats running to fill her seat. Indivisible Vashon does not endorse candidates, so you're not going to hear an endorsement from me, but do take a close look at your voter's pamphlet. Look online to find opportunities. The 350 Dems had a online interview with both candidates some time ago now. So take a look for some resources. That's an important decision for Vashon, and it will be on our ballot.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks. Truman, Craig, anything to add?
Not really. I haven't looked at my my local pamphlet yet. It's sitting on my kitchen counter.
Yeah, I just got it yesterday, I think. Or not yesterday, day before, or Saturday.
Right.
Yeah.
So the war in Ukraine is certainly escalating quite a bit in the last few days. What, Stacey, is there anything that you see with the war in Ukraine in terms of impact on energy in the United States and ultimately coming back to this liquid natural gas plant, or is that too amorphous? What do you see in terms of international sort of energy demands spinning out of this sort of war in Ukraine and constraints on Russian oil? You know, Europe certainly facing an energy crisis this winter. How do you see that playing out with what you're dealing with?
I mean, Puget Sound Energy has said from the beginning that they don't plan to export, but we know how far we can trust Puget Sound Energy, so who knows? Same thing with City of Tacoma. Supposedly, they say that it'd have to go through all kinds of new rigorous permits if they were going to start to export, but we know how rigorous their permit process really is. So at the moment, it's not anything, you know, that's active in the public sphere, but who knows. I mean, personally, I tend to focus more on local, so I wouldn't be the best one to kind of chime in on where global energy kind of goes. But I think just kind of from this, you know, somewhat uninformed perspective, to me, this just really shows again why we need to take our power back and make sure that we're using energy sources where we don't have to go and get it, where we don't have to take part in wars, you know. So that solar energy, the wind energy, finding different kinds of hydro that doesn't harm salmon and really implementing that, you know, I think it just kind of really underlines how silly it is for us to continue trying to stay engaged with gas and oil when we could be investing in things that aren't going to be reliant on how things are going in other countries.
Right. Hey, Truman, what I know you don't hear as much from your Army buddies as you used to.
No, not about these issues. No, I don't.
But what about the Ukraine war? Where are they on the war in Ukraine?
You know, it's interesting. I don't really get any feedback from these guys. But I know that that my relatives in Texas, of course, they're very much interested in the petroleum wars, as it were, and they anything that disrupts the or discourages production in the West Texas and the Permian Basin in particular is a huge concern to them. So you know, therefore. As much curtailing of foreign oil as we can find, simply because they want to, you know, further produce and encourage the production there in the Permian Basin. So that's about all I know about it, actually.
So the old adage, all politics is local.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely yeah. There. Yeah.
Interesting. Craig, there's been quite a bit of evidence coming out, particularly as Ukrainian advance has taken place into formerly occupied territory, of war crimes or potential war crimes. What's your take on that? And what's the process you see, or do you see a process for ever sort of dealing with that, those war atrocities that seem to be occurring?
Well, there are organizations and procedures set up to deal with war crimes. They haven't been particularly successful. At present count, I think the number of war crimes people estimate that have been committed by Russia and Ukraine exceed 20,000, maybe up to 30,000 separate war crimes. Under various international treaties, certain organizations are given authority to try to prosecute individuals, the Geneva, the Hague, the Rome, all these treaties. They can prosecute individuals for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity, crimes of aggression. War crimes include attacking civilians. We've seen a lot of that. Taking on or taking out vital infrastructure. That's a war crime. We've seen a lot of that. Use of various kinds of weapons, landmines, chemical, nuclear weapons, attacking, not caring for sick and wounded, that sort of thing. But the people who have jurisdiction, the International Court of Justice, is if you want to prosecute a country like Russia. But unfortunately, that's a UN organization-based organization, and the members of the Security Council can veto any prosecution, and Russia is a member of the Security Council. So that is not probably the best way to go. The International Court, Criminal Court, on the other hand, prosecutes individuals and has had success in Sarajevo, you know, Yugoslavia, and in Africa. The problem is that Russia, the United States, and Ukraine are not members of that treaty. We're one of the few countries in the world that didn't sign on to that treaty. That doesn't mean that we won't have an opportunity or people can't agree to the jurisdiction of that court. The problem is, how do you arrest the individuals? So,
and one quick question there too, since they are not, I know that they're looking at individuals. I mean, I know that I'm seeing on television that they're trying to get information on specific individuals in this. So would they not be prosecutable, if that's a word, for under this treaty?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, clearly. The problem, of course, is that the International Criminal Court does not have a police force.
Right.
It would be a horrible precedent if countries started going into other countries and kidnapping individuals to bring them back to prosecute them. It's a complicated issue. People love to hear that response. They don't like to hear that response, but is a complicated issue. And the International Criminal Court out of The Hague in the Netherlands has a very active group of investigators, as well as does NATO and the Ukrainian prosecution. So there's a lot of work being done. Will Putin ever be prosecuted? Unlikely. He'd have to, you know, come to a rock concert in Kiev or New York City or something before somebody could arrest him, which after the fact is probably not going to happen.
So we can't put him up there with Trump? No.
So we're down to the last 2 minutes. There are a couple of quick announcements before we say goodbye. But Thursday night, the Heritage Museum is sponsoring a talk by Bianca Perla on the 10 years of BioBlitzes. And BioBlitzes, if you're not aware, is a sort of 24-hour sort of intensive identification of every biological living thing within a specific area on the island. And for 10 years, the Nature Center has been doing that, and Bianca's going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And Truman, you have an announcement about Voice of Vashon?
Yeah. The Voice of Vashon is going to be 9 years old this year, and we are sponsoring a lip sync birthday bash, which we've done several years in a row. I just want to plug that a little bit. It starts on the 17th, and it runs through the 27th of October. You'll see people doing a lip sync in costume, and they do videos of from the 17th through the 27th. People can vote, and just like in other items here on the island, it's $1 a vote, and the group, the top three that garner the most votes, will perform on the 27th, which will be live streamed and hosted by Whiskey Jim, our one of our favorite DJs here at the Voice of Vashon. And we do have some sponsors we'd like to thank, and that's the Palouse Winery, Nashi Orchard, Fair Island Vet, IGA, Pandora's Box, and the sponsors of the venue for the 27th are Camp Colvos and Giraffe. So we really appreciate their support, and we would ask folks to check it out between the 17th and 27th and vote. Hey. Vote a dollar a vote.
Thanks, Truman. Yeah, so Stacy, thank you very much for joining us and sharing information about Tacoma and the LNG plant, and really appreciate that. And so for Stacy, for Kevin, for Truman, for Craig, I'm Bruce Hallman. We'll see you next week on the next edition of the Brown Briefly. Ooh.